then the recognition and cultivation of intuitive faculties. These are elementary and are additional methods of progress. Then comes the study of spiritual laws, for these must be known and understood, that a newly arrived spirit may not infringe upon them. These laws have to do with the harmony of heaven and the perfect accord of millions upon millions of souls. Once these laws are understood, the newly arrived spirit may discover the infinite variety of teaching here and may select the study most adapted to his taste. This does not mean ignorance along other lines, however, for education is harmonious and many-sided, but simply the specialty he desires most to perfect himself in. This done, his work commences, happy work and happy acquisition of knowledge. Always this specialty in view, yet with so many other sidelights, or occupations that the variety is always stimulating to new endeavor and further progress. Then his fitness for a teacher is decided upon, and if he has this talent he becomes a teacher of others. There is no limit to acquisition and no limit to one's taste. Two or three specialties often go together. Mary here has half a dozen. She uses these and still goes on acquiring other knowledge for her own pleasure. The one-sided person does not exist here. He would be a curiosity. You have some sort of government, have you not? Yes, we are held to account in various ways. We receive instructions from higher intelligences, and report to them of success or failure. But there is no unreasoning tyranny, remember that. For instance, if I have a talent in some one direction, I may be asked to use that talent. Or if I need instruction in some direction, I may be asked to seek that instruction. All is meant for our development, and for our more intelligent or capable service. Then you have nothing that corresponds to our political government? No, for all here is the process of development, and the best good is the one thought. How do those in authority gain their position? Can you compare it with the system on earth a little? There are teachers above us who are wiser than we. They come to us to help direct our efforts. Above them are wiser ones still, I mean those who have been here longer, and have been led into higher knowledge. It is like the grades of school, just a little. But the authority in its finality must come from an all-wise ruler whom you call God. And we look up to Christ as his representative among the spheres and circles. Then can you understand that the teachers come to us with the authority of goodness and purity of character, and wisdom derived from the higher influences and the higher studies? Character, wisdom, love, service, these are the characteristics of the teachers who help us, who make our laws, and lead us into the higher knowledge and service. 12. Love and service. Now abide faith, hope, love, these three, but the greatest of these is love. Love is the fulfilling of the law. Thus wrote Paul nearly 2,000 years ago. And again in this later century the lesson of love is being sent to us with renewed urgency. Love and service, service and love. These must be the watchwords if the world's is ever to be at peace. Love is the foundation on which all goodness stands, and must in some way become the law of life everywhere. Love is one, but its manifestations appear in a thousand ways. Love is never wasted. Its influence may not be recognized, but its power is sure. Then we are told that love and service walk hand in hand in that other and better life. All labor, all service, all giving of oneself, should begin with love and be filled with love, service to mankind, service always and everywhere, with love as the foundation of the effort. Christ came to preach this law of love, and the world must be re-baptized with love if it is to experience peace among nations. So often was the necessity for love and service on earth reiterated, so often a spiritualizing of the earth life insisted, that once we asked, if teaching and preaching. This truth was the sum and substance of spirit life. The answer came with emphasis and speed, but there is much beside preaching and teaching. Architecture, color formation, flowers and beauty of scene, studies of the heavens above and the planets revolving about their suns, the strange lives on these planets, invention, discovery. Where did the discoveries of Earth come from? Did the cave dwellers know the secrets of electricity, or did they fly through the air, or sail the oceans, or live in luxurious homes? Don't forget that the impulse to these improvements came from here. and these impulses given to mortals are a part of the love and service that sound to you like preaching. Many material beings must be helped along material lines. The dwellers on some of the outer planets have to be inspired to find ways of obtaining heat and food. We help them to find the best of the material world in which they live. Can you realize how different life would be if mortals would learn to live the unselfish life, and learn also the truths of spiritual existence? There must be progress in spiritual life if the world is to be saved from becoming a wreck. You think we have used one expression overmuch, that of love and service as describing heavenly activity. But in the poverty of human expression and the lack of human knowledge of the life of the Spirit, how can we better express the heavenly joy and activity? Do not dwell on the past. Its failures and disappointments are over. Let them go. Move onward and upward. Live in spiritual thought, in the spiritual ideals of love, joy, peace, and happiness. 13. Activities and occupations. Many aspects of life in the spirit world are made more clear by what has been already said. But only a little has so far been presented that makes one familiar with their general activities, what we would speak of as their daily life and occupations. To have real happiness in the earth life, one must be busy under congenial circumstances. When this rule is applied to spirit life, one at once begins to wonder what they do, how they put in the time. In a world where no hours are set aside for sleeping, eating, care of the person or care of the dwelling, or, more than all, for making a living. Early in our writing we had been told enough to set us thinking, and we remarked, "Your descriptions are rather different from the old ideas of psalm singing and golden streets." That was a much misunderstood figure of speech. It was only a mind picture to suggest happiness and occupation, but earthly thought took it too literally. There was nothing else to suggest a different idea, we replied. I know. That is why we want to give you greater knowledge of this life, which is as sane as the highest earthly occupation, and far more delightful. I can tell you some of our activities, but you may have trouble in understanding, as we cannot well express them in terms of human language. For instance, you cannot understand the terms we use in creating or combining colors. You could not possibly understand how our music is created. And so with a multitude of things. To tell you anything of our occupations, you must know first that we are taught to work for others, which is the joy of life here. Then we are taught various sciences and the methods of spirit thought. We are then allowed to go to other planes and study the conditions there. We can see all the life on the different planets and work there if we choose. We are free to choose our work. But, if later we find objections, we may change. Some are teachers, some are messengers, some welcome the new arrivals, many are caring for the little children, some study the other planets, and many will go to distant worlds to learn such new conditions as may be understood. We are interested in the development of the processes of the mind as they act upon outward things, such as the formation of our plant life, the combination of colors, and the manufacture of fabrics. These are all mind processes, all regulated by fixed laws. We plan the beautiful fabrics with which spirits are clothed, and it is also with the powers of the mind that homes and halls and buildings for art and teaching are constructed. Architecture is a marvelous work, and we have all the riches of heaven to inspire the planning of either wonderful buildings. Authors are here writing books, I mean spiritually writing them, and spiritually reading them to others. Will you be surprised to learn that writing by alphabet is taught? That is part of our education in order to keep the memory of earth language and sought to communicate with those of earth. Some study chemistry as it pertains both to the material and to the invisible life. Others teach history. The poor little earth is not the only planet with a history. Some develop new ideas in mechanics. Most of such things are suggested from here. Then we have work for other planets and other universes altogether away from any conditions that you know. We are in some ways more advanced than they are, in others they are superior to us. There are many problems, and in solving them we are climbing upward in many ways. But the way is long and the road a weary one for those who have not learned their lessons on earth. Many come here so strongly influenced by their earthly beliefs that they do not realize themselves as spirit at all, and have to be led in various ways to comprehend that death had separated them from the life they once knew. That is one of the things that give us occupation. Then we have many who have recently come over who are ignorant of this life and have to learn its new ways of perceiving and enjoying. This is another way in which some of the circle are occupied. When not engaged in helping those who need us, we are studying the spirit forces, thought power and thought building, the etheric atoms and how to use them. You do not know, nor can you know, all the occupations of this life. We have given you those, or described those, more nearly resembling the occupations of earth life. But there are many, many others of which you cannot as yet form any conception. We are active with a freedom unknown on earth because of added powers. We are happy with a joy unknown on earth because of increased sense of appreciation, and we worship with an infinitely greater reverence because we are more in touch or communion with the divine. Could you describe your own activities for one day? Your breath would be taken away if I were to tell you of the speed and ease with which I accomplish a host of things. I may go to a planet with a message or lesson. I may go to a hall of learning, or drift away to some far-off circle to learn of its activities, or I may be helping some mortal on earth, or receiving some newly arrived soul. All of these would not be too much to accomplish in a day here, and much more could be brought within its hours if necessary. An intimate diary of your work, and of your impressions while doing these things, would be very interesting to mortals. The reply came very emphatically. But, you see, we do not try to keep track of what we do. That way might lead to pride. Our way is to do good and forget our work as soon as possible and move on to the next duty. But do not forget that duty and pleasure are one with us. Considerably later, possibly a year or more afterward, we spoke of their work again, asking, "You spoke yesterday of turning to other things after our talk. Just what did you do? And what have you been doing today?" Mary went to a circle where they were studying magnetic waves, and listened to a lecture on this subject. Then she went to hear some music in the great temple of music, and listened until her soul was filled with harmony. After that she went to a newly arrived spirit who was not finding her way perfectly, and tried to help her to realize her surroundings. And the hours sped by until she finally went to her home. And she had one of the dear talks and companionships which are such a blessing to them both. These are just a few things. Many others came into the day that with you is just over : a certain other studies, journeys to the library for help and knowledge, and teachings in various ways and places. To this I replied, "Yes, and you did not have to do up your hair and change your dress before you went to the library, and you did not have to consider the weather, and if it was a long way, you did not have to order out the automobile, or take a streetcar. You are right. There are no obstacles in the way, and we make each day equal to half a dozen on earth." What was Dee doing? Mary says, she went to her children 2 or 3 times, for she has several groups under her care. Then she spent much time helping and comforting several little ones, just come over, and this is for her such a loving and lovely work. Then she went to her studies and to various lectures, and so her day passed pleasantly, and included various little occasions of going to see if you needed her and were all right. "You were not well last night, but we did not worry, as we thought you would soon be better. And tonight when you took up the pencil, it seemed to be a telegram to us, and we started, one from the lecture and the other from our home, and here we are. Now tell us what you have been doing." Sis said she had to see the doctor, and asked Dee if she remembered his treatments for the throat. "I should say I did, and you hated them worse than we." Then went over the events of the day. Mary says, "You surely had a good time. Anything good at the movies?" 14. Spirit forces. As one becomes familiar with the work of communication between the spirit and the material world, it is quite apparent that much difficulty is experienced when attempts are made to convey information that is beyond the ability of the medium to express. This is illustrated when comparing our earlier communications with those of later date. When using the UWI aboard, we were for a short time in touch with one who was much interested in chemistry, and he tried to give us a description of the manner in which atoms were formed. Some interesting statements were made, though little information was gained. Sis knows practically nothing of chemistry or of chemical terms. I had read a little on such subjects, so it seems likely that my mind supplied the words while my hands were on the ouija board. But the statements were not consciously mine, and I had previously only a vague understanding of the information conveyed. Since then, when all the communications have come through Sis's pencil, scientific subjects have not been prominent. Persistent questioning, however, has elicited a few replies that seem important. The following was given when we were inquiring into the work of construction by thought processes. We in this circle are not yet advanced enough to deal with atoms and electrons, or to watch their motions. Other planes have done this and are busy explaining the existence and movements and powers of the electrons, or grains of force, as you have been told they were called. The electrons are the nearest approach to spirit of anything pertaining at all to matter. They are etherealized to such a degree as to be almost pure spirit, yet when they are surrounded by material forces they obey those laws. They may belong to either the seen or the unseen world. When connected with matter they become part of the material atom, when used by spirit they lose all material attractions and become amenable to spirit control. And again, try to conceive of thoughts as formative processes in themselves, and in dealing with the material used, are all powerful to build from that material. The electrons are the material, and thought can attract, distribute, or segregate these minute particles as desired. In talking this over, we wondered if the electron we had in mind was the same thing they mentioned. We asked Professor James about it and he replied, "I am not a chemist and can only answer as I have been taught by others. The electrons or grains of force are scarcely differentiated from spirit. Their quality is so ethereal that spirit workers use them continually, yet they may become inherent in matter under certain conditions, and apparently become slightly material. I would call it, in the language of the psychologist, a double personality." That is hardly a fair answer to your question, but it is dealing with forces so subtle that the best of us here are simply students. The double activity is all I can use in explanation. You really think we are both speaking of the same thing then? I imagine so, but I did not study the science of chemistry there and have no means of comparing. The professor who long ago talked to us of chemistry added, "The electron here is practically the same as the electron there. At least we believe so. It is the spiritual side of the material, or the material side of the spiritual force." In studying the spirit forces it was learned that most, if not all, of them were vibratory in character. The subject of vibrations was of course quite prominent when we were told of music and its production, and some of the information concerning vibrations is included in the chapter on music. The first mention of vibrations came very early in the communications when D said, "Early in this life we are taught about chemical laws. What kind of chemistry have you in a spirit world? I do not know how to tell you, the subject is too big for my brain." Do the chemical laws apply to substances unknown to us? The only difference, as I understand it, is in the density of the substance. Density means only vibrations. These are as the vibrations of electricity and light. After Sis had been using the pencil for some time, we asked for more information concerning spirit forces, and especially vibrations. We had been talking with Mary and she said, "We have vibrations finer and more rapid than any conceived on Earth. In traveling we use different forces for different distances, and can increase the rate of speed at will." Another teacher added, "I can express a little of the laws of motion to you, but you must be patient with my difficulty in describing spirit laws in mortal language. Vibrations are known of course in the material world, and are studied by scientists there. But we have finer forms of these vibrations. These are as necessary to us as the lower forms are necessary to you. Could you multiply the highest vibrations there 1,000-fold, you would begin to understand the powers we use in motion, light, music, and sound. Is that right?" "Do you really mean 1,000-fold? We cannot state this in exact numbers, but my expression is by the way of comparison and approaches the truth as nearly as I can give it. This is so much greater than light as we know it. Do you recognize the grades between? Where earthly force ends, spirit force begins, and we are sensible of all the gradations in power and rapidity. We can control them to a large extent, and can use where we cannot control. We explain light as waves of ether. Are your higher forces explained in the same way? Light is a part of the higher vibrations. Ether is filled with vibrations. The electrons or particles are in constant motion. We have no material substances to create vibration, as sound is created with you, but we have the finer forces of the mind. At one time for a number of evenings a teacher from a higher plane attempted to convey to us some idea of the forces used by them. But because of the difficulty of expressing spirit powers in mortal terms, he did not succeed in getting much through concerning the forces, although he did tell us of the activities on that plane. In his talk, and in what Mary has said about spirit forces, the word electricity has been written. Regarding this, I asked, "You have used the word electricity. Do you mean just the power we know as that?" "No. We use the word you best comprehend. The spirit counterpart is more subtle, more ethereal, but powerful even beyond the earth-known force." Later, when using the words magnetism and magnetic attractions, it is quite likely that spirit powers are meant rather than those we know by those names. When the teacher was trying to describe the power of the higher plane, Sis asked, "Has it anything to do with ether? What is ether? Tell me that." "We cannot do that. Neither can we yet. Wait until knowledge can explain more fully." But we persisted in our questions at various times, and the following replies were elicited. "Ether is invisible and imperishable. It is an unknown quantity filling all space. It has qualities quite unknown to mortals as yet. Higher spirits study its formation and composition and do know about it, but it is in advance of our knowledge. Is it possible for mortals to learn of ether, its characteristics and powers? They have discovered little as yet. I think it possible, but much research work must be done first. It would be unwise for us to give such information if we knew. Study, and the desire for new truths, are for the purpose of stimulating minds on earth, and form one of the steps leading spiritward. Human understanding is slowly turning toward the spiritual. And, in some far distant time, earthly and spiritual efforts will come together. Or at least the mortal may so understand the immortal, as to be nearly conformed to its spiritual counterpart. At another time Mary said, "The ether is the medium for the transmission of thoughts, and sometime the world will take cognizance of these silent processes and powers, but it must become more spiritualized before it understands." It is unfortunate that Sis is not more familiar with chemistry and physics. A number of attempts have been made to describe various spirit powers, which have been partial failures because of the difficulty Sis experiences regarding the terms or vocabulary of chemistry, physics, or other scientific occupations. Several times, however, our questions have brought out a few sentences in reply, and I give some of them here. A teacher from a higher plane was talking, "We are studying a power akin to magnetism, although it is a much finer and more spiritual force. It is produced by the action of certain etheric waves that move in circles about an etheric center. It is a force to you unknown, finer even than spirit, but so powerful that it might sway a universe." Further regarding magnetism we were told, "He wishes to say that the experiments of scientists are leading in the right direction, and that science will prove immortality, or rather the persistence of individual life, before long, through the study of magnetic forces." "What do you mean by magnetism?" "Magnetism is not an earth-born property, it is rather a spiritual substance, too fine, too ethereal, for human vision or touch. Yet it may be discovered through the action of its particles, the same as an atom may be studied without ever seeing it. Magnetism is a spirit force. That is enough for the present. What it does, the scientists on earth are trying to discover. When its power is known and fully understood and utilized, the bridge spanning the gulf between the mortal and the immortal will be complete." We were talking of the book by Dr. Schrenck-Notzing of Europe, and of the forms materialized under his experimentation, and we asked if magnetism was connected with them. "Yes, the magnetic currents flowing through the visible substance rendered it alive while it remained. But when the magnetic current was withdrawn the substance dematerialized immediately." "You say magnetism made it alive?" "Yes. Magnetism might be defined as life. I asked my father one evening if he had any information for us. He replied, "Do you keep up with the new theories in chemical science? The work is progressing here along unusual lines, and bids fair to revolutionize some of the theories over there." I spoke of seeing an item describing how a small automobile was driven by radio electricity. Electricity is one of the powers closely allied with our more spiritual forces, and the study of electricity will eventually lead many into the belief in these forces. I am not a scientist myself, but I watch and wonder and admire. She said she could not understand a great deal about scientific subjects. You will not be a scientist, I can see that. But you will use science here to help in other ways. Your music will be one of the results of science, and you will be dependent on it in a thousand ways for progress and happiness. I said it was difficult to imagine chemical studies there, as so much of our study consisted of actual experimentation. You have chemical apparatus there for experiments, we have the spiritual counterparts here, and through this apparatus we study along experimental and progressive lines. It is difficult for you to understand, of course, but we do experiment regarding material substances, and make discoveries of different compositions and their different uses. We know the different metals and minerals and see far ahead to a thousand uses yet unknown to mortals. There is always something to look forward to. When the Earth is a worn-out magazine, it will be time for mortals to quit, but that time is far away, unknown and uncounted cycles ahead. Another evening someone else wrote, "We are trying to get in touch with human thought and trying to influence that thought toward the pure beliefs of future life, of progress, of unselfish service. Can you help us? We have had so much it would seem there was little more that was new." Perhaps that is so, but line upon line and precept upon precept seems to be necessary to impress the human thought. I know, for I have not forgotten my old hardness of heart concerning some things. Were you a religious teacher? Not at all. I was a teacher of science, and that along materialistic lines. It was difficult for me to get any impression beyond the material forces. Science, you know, tries to account for all these things by material explanations. I had to come here before I found the intangible something we call spirit, or the unseen thing we know as life and immortality, or the vision that could see and accept the divine. We have always been impressed by the evidence of a tendency in all life to improve, to advance. That is the secret of it all, the upward climb, no matter how slow. Believe in that, and your faith will be sure. It does not need unlimited study and research in order to comprehend principles. But some scientists seem to think that this tendency is only another principle, another foundation law, like gravitation. Who made the law? Who decided that gravitation, cohesion, magnetism, attraction, and a thousand other laws must go to the forming of a world or of a people? Some think these laws always existed, were never created. That is getting back into the unknowable and the unthinkable. We here do not go back farther than to the creative force that governs all things. Many in higher spheres have far more definite knowledge than we. Scientists on Earth know nothing about it. They take their own conceptions for absolute law. But this life will disclose impressions, intuitions, as well as absolute knowledge, that will crush into nothing their manifold theories. 15. The aura, personality, etc. Magnetic currents and magnetism lead to the subject of magnetic attraction, and this leads to personality, character, and congeniality. These determine the personal ties, the relationships, in the spirit world. There seems no dividing line. Even guardian spirits, guides, or controls, are allied subjects for discussion. I will begin with a remark that Mary made one evening when Sis was rather despondent, and the writing was not coming easily. "Try to be cheerful, so that I can come into your aura, as the spiritualists say, which is only getting in touch with your mentality." What is the aura? It is a magnetic condition which throws off certain colors in certain personalities. There is an attraction in each person's aura that calls persons of responsive attraction. You must know that there is as much difference in personality here as there. Attraction from one may not mean attraction from all. It is a matter of congeniality and sympathy, largely. This question of attraction made me wonder whom I would have for friends over there. You will find those who belong in your magnetic current.